We humankind are at an inflection point, a critical threshold. We soon must choose between the fear that is the currency of populism and the hope that is harbored by those who, like Teilhard de Chardin, describe the possibility of a second axial age. In his volume, The Origin and Goal of History, Carl Jaspers describes the period from 800 to 200 before the Common Era as the Axial Age. He does this because, in his words, it gave birth to everything which since then humankind has been able to be. It was an era when Lao Tzu and Confucius revolutionized Chinese thought. Buddha, Mahavira, and the rishis who wrote the Upanishads transformed philosophy, religion, and ethics in India. And the followers of Zoroaster in Persia explored profound questions about the nature of good and evil. In the Levant, Jewish prophets such as Isaiah and Jeremiah sounded calls for higher levels of moral awareness. In Greece, Pythagoras, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle articulated the fundamental ideas of Western philosophy. Before the Axial Age, the dominant form of consciousness was cosmic, collective, tribal, mythic, ritualistic. By contrast, the consciousness born in the Axial Age, which was then extended by successor waves such as Christianity, Islam, the Enlightenment, and the Scientific Revolution, carries a sense of individual identity that permeates the cultures of the world today. Since the middle of the last century, we've begun to see signs of a second axial period. Although first described by theologians, the second axial age also has progressive secular dimensions that Teilhard predicted, such as a process of planetization, a shift in the forces of social evolution analogous to biological evolution, proceeding from emergence to divergence to convergence. The first groupings of humans were familial and tribal, engendering loyalty to a group and separation from others. Humanity then diverged, creating different cultures and nations. But the spatial finitude and spherical shape of our planet were intrinsic constraints on this process. So human beings now occupy all of the Earth's readily habitable areas, and modern communication and transportation systems mean that groups can no longer detach completely from the world. Today, humankind is pressed into a full planetary community. Even as powerful forces of difference and division incline us against one another, we're being drawn into a global society. But this global world need not compromise the great gift of experiential diversity. Teilhard saw not a homogenization, but rather what he called creative unions in which diversity is enriched. As he wrote, in any domain, whether it be the cells of a body, the members of a society, or the elements of a spiritual synthesis, union differentiates. As he put it differently, whether subatomically or globally, elements unite in what he called center-to-center unions. Just as physics describes centers of mass in the universe that are drawn together, capitals of the world will be connected even more than they are. They will touch one another at their creative cores, releasing new energy and much deeper understanding. This powerful center-to-center contact offers the promise that we, the citizens of cities and of an integrated world, may discover what is authentic and vital, not only about others, but also about ourselves. New York University, which I've been privileged to serve, has embraced this Teilhardian view of the world in shaping itself over these last two decades into a global network university. Founded nearly 200 years ago in the world's premier global city, global and local simultaneously, it was founded to be, quote, in and of the city, close quote, in the words of our founders. NYU therefore found it natural to become, quote, in and of the world, close quote. Today, the university is located in 16 idea capitals on six continents. anchored by full research campuses not only in New York, but also in Abu Dhabi and Shanghai. This is not an independent set of branches. It's a fully integrated circulatory system through which faculty, staff, and students flow freely, and along with them, their ideas. It is in this context that these extraordinary volumes both operate and cooperate, simultaneously touched by this planetization and shaping it. My NYU colleague, Professor Colette Mazzucchelli, both in her work at NYU and as president of the Global Listening Center, has practiced a kind of secular ecumenism. At NYU's New York campus, she teaches seminars across schools in conflict resolution, religious radicalization, and ethnic conflict. Each a story of division. But from these potentially disheartening stories, she draws a contrapuntal lesson of hope through aggressive listening and through genuine dialogue. So it is in this volume that she, James Felton Keith, and C. Ann Hollifield offer us a homage to and an example of collective, nuanced conversation that truly advances knowledge and understanding. This volume, collecting as its content does the thoughts the participants spread throughout our global society, presents genuine center-to-center dialogue, and it does in fact release new energy and deeper understanding. It remains for us to emulate this example still more pervasively in all of our conversations. Congratulations to the editors and the authors. Onward and upward together.
WHCR 90.3 FM, New York.